And it's Steve Tasker who has been all over the field.
Kind of unique. He was kind of a dual role player for you.
Steve.
A balloon.
Steve. A blimp. We're not even in the stratosphere of normalcy.
Let's get it rolling here, coming off a holiday weekend. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. OTA week number two. We've got plenty to bring to you on that subject in just a second. How was your long weekend, Steve?
It was long. Loved it. Loved it.
Got some really good weather. Saturday was a little dicey for a while,
Saturday
but Sunday
morning,
and Monday were
stunk.
The
yeah,
bomb.
It was great. Typical. Got some work done. Played a little golf.
Okay.
Had a little fun. A little family time. Presto changeo. It was good stuff.
I was on the grill.
For half the weekend?
Two of the 4 days.
Oh, my God.
I was the pit master. Which is fine. Because there are perks to being the host grill family.
Yeah, the extra 5 pounds on Tuesday, right?
Well, if I know you, because when you have a plate of food put in front of you, you're a lot like me. You probably ate too much over the last 4 days. I know I did.
Yeah, you should finish it.
And then go get some more. The biggest perk about hosting is you have all the leftovers.
Right.
Which I just dove into before we came on the air here,
right,
having my lunch, which is glorious. But I drove my daughter back from school last week, came in on Thursday, and then we're off Friday and Monday. So it was a really weird dive back into the show and then back out of the office.
Right.
And we were hosting two young Italians. So one
from Italy.
From Italy.
Okay.
One who had done a semester here, their version of a semester abroad, with my daughter at school, and they became good friends. And then her boyfriend came over, and they're kind of touring America.
Right.
Like until the middle of June. They're doing a full month here outside of her school and studies being done. And they were great. We put them up for a couple of days. Couldn't have been nicer. But they wanted to see Niagara Falls.
Right.
Kind of do the thing here.
Niagara
they
Falls,
also wanted
wings.
Yeah, they wanted
stuff,
wings. Man. So we took them for wings. And my daughter is like filming their reactions on her phone. Hot wing,
Right.
Designer wing, unusual flavor wing,
right,
all of that stuff. And their reactions were priceless. Just, it was unbelievable. We bring him into the house, and my daughter's showing him around, oh, this is our home and whatever, whatever. And she, so they go looking at my son's room, and the young woman says, oh, my God, I feel like I am in an American movie. I am waiting for the father to come up and knock on the door and say, hey, son, want to have a catch? Like, some of their commentary was cracking me up.
Yeah.
I mean, we're driving up the street. We're finally getting home from New York, and they're going, oh, my gosh, I am like in an American movie. We are in the suburbs. Is that how you say? Like, I was just like, yeah, you're in the suburbs. But they were a riot, an absolute riot. They couldn't get enough of everything.
Yeah.
Like, I'm grilling dinner for them on Friday, and the guy's taking pictures of my grill full of meat, I must take a picture. Is this okay? Oh, yeah, it's fine. Take a picture.
Yeah, right. Like, you have permission. That's...
Yeah. And we brought them down here Friday afternoon, and they got a look at the stadium. Now, they see big soccer stadiums in Italy and everything.
Sure.
But they were impressed, and I showed them the field house. I showed them our studios here, and they had seen green screens before and whatnot. So
right,
they were, but they loved the whole thing.
Oh,
so
yeah,
they're getting ready to leave Saturday morning. They're taking the train back to New York. They couldn't have been nicer. And they're like, the best 3 days of my life, he said. I was like, okay, like, I appreciate the compliment, let's not lay it on too thick. But
I gotcha.
Suffice to say, they were impressed with America.
Good stuff.
Well, it was good.
Well,
and then,
okay,
we all ate too much food, and that's what you do.
That's the
American and we are in prime time here, Steve, are we not, weather-wise? We are entering the
kicking prime
of what Buffalo has to offer weather-wise.
It is absolutely kicking. And I know this, too, and you know this as well, Memorial Day yesterday. That really kicks everything off. And you can, here in Buffalo, we all know it. Nobody appreciates the good weather like we do.
Oh, yeah.
We appreciate it. Everybody else takes it for granted to some extent. We never do. And I'm
soak
telling you what,
all up.
You know this, in Buffalo and Western New York, for every single weekend from now until opening day of the football season is packed.
Yeah.
You can do 5 different things that are worthy of a day trip every single weekend.
Buffalonians from basically late May to mid-September only spend time in their house to sleep.
Right.
And use the facilities. That's about
That's
it.
That's right.
That's about it.
That's
and
right.
to go in the fridge and to pull meat out to go grill outside.
That's right.
Like that. That's all
best.
We do.
It's the best.
Minimum time inside.
I remember back in the day when we were playing, my wife and I used to go back and live where in Western Kansas with her family and stuff. We'd take our kids back because they would be below
school
age.
Doesn't it get wicked hot out there in the summer?
It does get wicked hot, and it's very dry.
Yeah.
So, and even though it's farmland where it's crops,
there's no shade.
Stuff, there's no shade. And it's picture Fargo, right? It's
okay.
That kind of landscape. So we're out there, and everything is kind of monochromatic. Just shades of brown, shades of black, shades of gray. You know, it's dry, very dry.
Oh,
all
nothing's
the time.
Even growing there.
Yeah,
right it,
the crops do, but they're you know.
Yeah.
So I remember this is, and I've heard people say that when they come to visit us. We drove back from Kansas. You know, it's like a 2-day drive. We pull back into Western New York. You pull down your street and you drive in. It's shocking. It almost hurts your eyes how lush everything is. Because we're out there, you know, people are out there, you know, we're in a desert. You come in here, and it's like driving into the rainforest. I mean, it is just, it pops. And right now, even today, I was telling somebody, I can watch the trees and the plants and the grass grow. I can sit there and watch them. It just fills in so fast and so lush. I just love it. From where I grew up, my wife and I grew up, this is, you know, this is Shangri-La up here. It really is. We love it because it just grows in and the trees are, all that stuff. We take that for granted because they get so much water. Now they get so much sunshine. You can watch the trees just swell.
Yeah.
It's awesome. So I never get tired of that because of the way I grew up.
Right.
And the kids are the same way because they've seen some stuff. They've been around and watched, you know, how their cousins live and stuff out there. It's never get tired. Never do not appreciate what it's like here.
Yeah. So we hope everybody enjoyed their holiday weekend. Maybe you had a day or two off in addition to Saturday and Sunday. But we are back at it today because, as we mentioned, it is week 2 of OTA practices for the players. And we know that Josh is going to be a little busy tomorrow with the match.
Yeah, Josh is not here today. It sounds bad when you say he's in Vegas, right?
Right.
Well, that's so. But are you going to have? I almost feel like in a watch party for this thing.
It's going to be pretty big. It's late though. It's early evening, right? It's like 5. It's 6:30. I think
it's only
off.
12 holes too.
Yeah.
So, and they'll be out west, so the daylight, it'll be earlier in the day out there, it'll only be 4, and they can certainly fit in 12 holes by that. But, I mean, he was at our club, he's out there every day. He was out there every day hitting balls, playing, darting around. He told me 2 weeks ago, I got to play it. I go, how much are you playing? Are you getting ready for this thing? You taking lessons? What are you doing? Lessons? I'm doing everything. I'm playing every day.
It's a little intimidating. You're on national television.
He was on it. I mean, he's like, I'm not. So I don't know. You can, and you know this. You don't know this, but because I'm a golfer, you can do all of that.
And still might not mean a hill of beans.
Oh, and you can embarrass yourself. You're so bad. Seriously, you can go out there and be razor sharp, and all of a sudden you show up and it's just not there. Your game's just gone. Now, chances are it's not going to be like that for him, but it could be, and that's why golf is. Yeah, you play it by yourself. You play it with your friends, 4 buddies, because once you start getting an audience, the dynamics change.
Yeah,
the dynamics change.
Josh calls himself a football player with a golf problem.
Right.
But Charles Barkley had him on his podcast because I think, what is it? Is it who's airing that? TNT or TBS? Or
TNT.
Yeah. So Barkley got him to talk about it. And Barkley asked him, you know, what's it like when you're playing around with your friends and then you're in front of a crowd? He goes, how do you play golf in front of a crowd? And I'm like, is Barkley asking this because he's trying to lay odds on the on the match? What's he's getting some trying to get some intel here. And Josh says he does get a little choked up on the first tee, but after he hits the first drive, as long as he puts it in the fairway, he kind of calms down a little bit.
Yeah.
Which wasn't all that different to how he used to behave on the field. He used to tell Dable, you know, give me a run play early because I got to get the first hit in to calm down. I got to take a hit.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that can't be music to the ears of any coordinator.
Quarterback
asking to get
it. I'm not doing anything. I've never done anything like this match they're doing, but I played in pro-ams.
Yeah.
Like, particularly in Rochester, the LPGA pro-ams and stuff. And so I've had to, and at the LPGA, when you're playing with Annika Sorenstam or Nancy Lopez,
you don't want to.
People are there.
Yeah.
So we tee off a couple of these years, we're teeing off at like 1:30 in the afternoon at this thing, and it's like there's 500 people standing there.
10
watching.
Deep.
Yeah. So you got to have. You got to have a plan when you go up there.
Yeah.
And I know this too. There's been when I couldn't get my mind around it, what I should do. So finally I started getting it right when I got up there. But early on, I literally remember being over the ball. And when I took it back, I was
shaking.
My hands were like shaking on the club quivered as it went back. Right. So the best way to do that, in my opinion, is if you've ever done this before, like when you're a little kid, and your parents are watching you do something stupid in the backyard. Hey, watch. Like, that's the mentality you got to have. Like, watch this. You got to just go out there and show off.
Grip and rip.
Just got to grip it and go for it and be happy with the result. I've done the worst and I've striped it down the middle, and I've also like six hopped it off the tee box too. I mean, it's like I've done that too. And
that's
you know
still
what?
Better than a slice.
Right. You know what though? When the next person gets up and sticks their peg in the ground, they've forgotten all about your shot, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah,
that's what you got to remember, and that's my it's really tough when there's a big crowd.
Yeah, it's nerve wracking.
But like, imagine the stinking Ryder Cup for these guys. Even the pros will tell you that's
now you're not only playing for yourself, you're playing for your whole country.
You got some people who. Like, even if they don't...
They're invested.
Right. Even if they don't... Nobody's betting on that thing, which everybody does. That's all it. They've got skin in the game. You've got 350 million people with skin in this game, and you're hitting it. So that was always my way out. Just go, you know what? Just do it like you do it for mom and dad on the porch, and you're just going to hit it, or your girlfriend or whoever. You're just going to show off for a second.
Yeah.
That's the best way to do it, because then you can let go and just do free and easy. And it gives you a little better results, but oof, I'm telling you.
Yeah.
Right now as I'm talking about it, I can still feel
the club.
The club quiver as I took it back. Oof, it's hard.
Speaking of the match, which, you know, we'll probably cover in a little more detail tomorrow, since it is tomorrow, Patrick Mahomes, who's also participating in it, had an interesting comment to reporters at the close of OTAs last week with the Chiefs. And he basically told reporters he expects his receiver targets to be more spread out in 2022. Quote, that's what you're going to see from this offense this year. It's going to be everybody. Travis Kelce is still going to get a lot of completions, a lot of yards, but I think the whole receiving room is going to have big days.
I think
that can be something we can use to our advantage. Mahomes also emphasized unpredictability on who will be working deep, indicating there will be more well-rounded roles for new players like Marquez Valdez-Scantling and Juju Smith-Schuster. Mecole Hardman could also see more deep routes because he's an elite speed guy. And the undrafted kid they signed, Justin Ross, who was that tall drink of water from Clemson.
Right.
He was running a lot of double move routes, according to reporters, and could be part of the downfield game plan. That's not even counting Sky Moore, their second round pick.
There's a lot in this with him saying that because everybody's looking, because the league evolves and it evolves quickly. And there's teams, and I think the Bills were one of them. They were doing that 11 personnel almost exclusively early on, and they carry a fullback who's slash tight end slash special teams guy. And all of a sudden, teams went in just maybe a handful or less years. Fullbacks were an oddity. They went from being a fixture to an oddity in just a handful of years. So the league evolves quick. And I'll be interested to see, because we saw Baltimore do this. We've seen Tennessee do this. Teams to swing the pendulum back away from it. But the cutting edge offenses so far in the last handful of 10 years have been the ones that air it out. They're the ones that are spreading out, well, yeah, motioning.
And the analytics say you get more out of a pass than a run,
right,
on average. So,
but you got to know this. It's going to continue to evolve. And
right,
if Kansas City's sitting there going, we're going to look like the 1988 Houston Oilers. We're going to run and shoot.
Yeah.
We're going to spread five wides with a one running back, and he's going to split out. We're going to go empty, and we're going to go. Is that going to happen more?
I think we're going to see more,
yeah,
of that.
Or is it going to be, you know what? We're going to get a fullback and two tight ends with 22 personnel.
Well,
let's go.
And it's funny you mention that, because as the game was kind of going towards pass, that's when Jim Harbaugh, when he was coaching the 49ers, said, we're going to pound the tar out of you. Everybody's got these lightweight linebackers to run,
right,
and cover. We're going to bring in some big old hosses that are just going to road grade the hell out of you, and we're going to win that way. Because he,
right,
had a quarterback who wasn't terribly accurate in Colin Kaepernick at the time, but
he was
a heck of a runner.
He could run.
So that's why they went that way. I don't know that there's too many teams that'll go that way. I suppose the Ravens could be a candidate for that still with Lamar. But I think more often than not, if you have the quarterback, people are going to be spreading it out even more,
yeah,
than we saw last year. Because the last couple of years, it's basically been Arizona and Buffalo leading the way with 10 personnel. And even then, that's only about 16 to 20% of the offensive snaps in total on the season. And that's high. It's more like 15% Arizona. Buffalo is like 11, 12%. In 10 personnel, total number of plays,
right,
last year.
They're about
year.
One out of every 10 snaps in 10,
yeah, so,
in no wideouts, empty, Josh is by himself.
Right. So does it drift more in that direction? I think if you have somebody like James Cook on the field, it does.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And what is Dawson Knox? You know, like Dawson Knox is a tight end in his position listing, but I would say he's pretty close to being a hybrid, like a tight receiver, if you will. And so if he's out on the field, yeah, it might still be 11 personnel, but they might be empty. They might be spreading it out. I mean, they could be doing anything. So, yeah, I could see it. I could see it going that way, Steve.
Yeah,
I really could. Not only here, not only Kansas City, but could be Green Bay. It could be, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, it could be all these places. It could be Minnesota. Could be the Chargers.
The Rams.
Could be the Rams. Could be all of these
the
clubs.
Broncos.
The Broncos. It's easier, really, to pick the ones that probably are not, like Tennessee, like Baltimore. Some of those, like even now, Carolina, I think they'd like to with Matt Rule.
I just don't know.
I don't think they got the horses. They don't
have
the
quarterback,
right? Miami's not going
to
do that. Although they're spouting off about how great their wide receiver core is. Surely Waddle and Tyreek Hill. Yeah, I get it, but that's two.
Yeah,
you literally need four if you're going to do it. So it's easier to pick the teams that are probably not going to be a part of that trend than those who are. And with the wide receivers that have been drafted hand over fist, I mean, just gobs of them every year, the league's kind of full of those guys, who at least had a high end when they came in. So this Mahomes saying this about all his guys, you know, being spread out and going, it may be a signal as to what the league's going to look like this year. It might be even more. Might have more than one team, like the old Houston Oilers I referred to earlier, where they got Warren Moon, four wideouts, and Alonzo Highsmith in the backfield, you know? Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. But I do know this. It's going to continue to evolve. It's going to continue to evolve. And some of these teams are going to be out in front of it. We'll see where the Bills fall. You got a new offensive coordinator, some new faces, new tool sets. It's going to be fun to see.
We'll have plenty more on Ken Dorsey's comments to the media this morning in his first press conference as offensive coordinator. We'll play some of his comments for you in about, I'd say about 10, 12 minutes' time, so stay tuned for that. There is other NFL news and notes to get to, though, and a bit of sad news, actually, as the Arizona Cardinals tragically lost one of their cornerbacks. Jeff Gladney was in a fatal car crash over the weekend in Texas, and it apparently was due to him driving at a very high rate of speed. According to the Dallas police, the accident involved two vehicles. Gladney's vehicle clipped the back of another car on its way by while he was speeding and then lost control of his car when he made contact with the other vehicle, sending that car out of control. It hit a freeway pier beam, which, you know, that's, usually are the supports on an overpass, and at a high rate of speed, that's just terrible.
Yeah, it's just
so he and his girlfriend unfortunately perished in the crash.
Yeah, it's just one
terrible
more tragedy that we all have to deal with.
I mean, we're not even a year removed from the Henry Ruggs speeding incident.
Drive the speed limit.
It's really unfortunate. Really unfortunate.
Yeah, it's a tragedy, and it's he was 26.
Yeah.
It's another horrible thing that happened.
Yeah. Changing gears here, OTAs and the no-shows, the voluntary, you know, it's voluntary, but people are still making a lot of the players who are not showing up to OTAs, especially when they had in the past. Chief among them, Lamar Jackson, who, as we know, did not report to OTAs. And now there are a couple of others who are making headlines in their respective NFL cities. Wide receiver Deontay Johnson in Pittsburgh has not been reporting to OTAs there. And the Patriots are missing their starting left tackle. Isaiah Wynn is not there. He's set to play on his fifth-year option this year, much like Tremaine Edmonds is here. And he has not been to any of the voluntary OTAs to this point. So just figure we lob a couple of names out to you so you're up to speed on who's showing up and where. And then there was this report from Browns beat writer Mary Kay Cabot, who said the team has no plans to cut Baker Mayfield, even if he was on the roster come training camp. He's due a fully guaranteed $18.86 million on the fifth-year option. Cleveland said they're reportedly prepared to pay that if they can't work out a trade with another team. Now, the Panthers were reportedly willing to acquire Baker Mayfield, but they would only pay $6 million of his $18 million deal due to him this year. They would take on $6 million and expect Cleveland to pay the remaining balance of $12 million plus, and that wasn't good enough for Cleveland, so they said forget it. And then the Carolina Panthers drafted Matt Corral, and that was the end of that. Mayfield has been a no-show at OTAs as expected. Steve, I know you and I were talking about this out on the practice field watching the Bills practice today, and we were saying, what if Watson is suspended at the beginning of the year? Does Baker Mayfield go out and play for the Browns? I don't think he does. I think the bridge is burned. I can't see him suiting up for that team after he feels he was done this way. But I mean, the guy played hurt all last year. I understand why his ego's bruised. I get it. I can't see him suiting up for them. Not after the way this went down. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, here's what you got to know. Is he going to ride his resume as it is now into free agency and see what he can do, which might not be a bad idea? Will he enhance his resume by going in and giving a full effort, maybe even winning some games? Like if Deshaun Watson is suspended for 6 games, he goes 4-2, 5-1, 6-0 in those games. Does it enhance his ability to find a job at the end of the year?
Yeah.
Does he gamble on himself and come in and give the Browns what they're paying for, $18 million worth? To me, that's always – if you're that guy, that's always what you do. You bet on yourself and you go in and play. But he stands to be just fine and dandy if he just sits and waits.
This is a staring contest, isn't
it? It is. He's not crushing himself by not playing. He could certainly
– the pressure is on the Browns to get this sorted out, isn't it?
The Browns – yeah.
You don't want to be on the hook for 18-8.
The Browns are missing an opportunity to have a $12 million backup quarterback when they're paying their starter
– 18.
No. If Carolina would have paid the $6 million, they'd have had him for $12 million or – paid him $12 million, and they would have had some other guy as a backup quarterback.
Well, they have Jacoby Brissett already to back up Deshaun Watson.
So they're paying whatever they're paying Jacoby Brissett and Baker into what the backup quarterback situation would be. But yet, if the Browns are moving on from Baker, absolutely. No question about it. Getting something for him in return,
that's gonna be
you're running out. You ran out of time. You know, you're just running out of time.
Yeah.
I mean, what? When are you going to do it? When are you going to trade that guy? And what are you going to get for him?
You're going to get exactly what Carolina.
Are you
going to
get $6 million? Are you going to get $6 million?
I don't know if you're getting that now.
And what else was it? Was it just the $6 million and future earning? I mean, future respects. Now, you don't even give a player or a draft pick to him.
No, because whatever team is willing to take Baker off their hands is doing the Browns a favor in the grand scheme of things here. So I can't see anybody offering anything in return in terms of personnel.
It says something about Carolina. They say Baker Mayfield, 4-year starter in the National Football League, won some games, played hurt all last year. He's done some good things in the league. We'll give you we'll pay him $6 million bucks to have him come over
here. That's to be Sam Darnold's backup, I think, if you're paying him.
Right. He's going to come in and compete with Sam Darnold for $6 million bucks. I mean, that's, to me, Baker Mayfield's got to be saying, wait a minute, that's $6 million bucks?
He doesn't have a say in that.
I know, but he's thinking, that's the market?
Well,
1 year, $6 million bucks? I should play.
Reality comes at
you fast. I should play and play well so I can get it up from where that is.
Life comes at you fast in the NFL, Steve.
Right?
About what your value is.
Wouldn't you be looking at that going, you can't get anybody to trade for me for more than $6 million bucks in 1 year? What? Wait a minute. Wait a minute. I'm doing commercials.
Yeah, I think as you astutely pointed out, though, the timing is all wrong. The timing is all wrong now. For him to find an ideal landing spot and for the Browns to get ideal compensation. That ship has sailed.
So I don't know. He could still get in and get
the only way it happens, I think, is if some other quarterback somewhere else suffers a catastrophic injury and the team wants a starter, someone they believe could be starting caliber for them as a stopgap. That's the only way I think it happens where the Browns are satisfied with what's being offered to them. Because then the tables turn. And now the team with the injured quarterback who's out for the year are suddenly in a position where they have to give something to get what they need to fill the hole that's just been created. I think that's the only way the thing flips. Unless the Browns dramatically change what they feel they're deserving of to get this guy off their roster. But it's a favor at the end of the day. Whatever NFL team steps up to the plate, it's a favor.
Because the Browns are, think about it. They paid Deshaun Watson.
Yeah.
What? $37 million bucks or something like that.
It was a $230 million contract.
They're guaranteed.
Yeah, all of it guaranteed.
So they're giving him that, and whatever they're giving him this year, and $18 million to Baker Mayfield.
Mm-hmm.
And he's only getting $1 million in salary as Deshaun Watson, but he got like $50 or $60 million bucks up front, right?
They have zero leverage. They have no negotiating power. They have to take the best deal. Should they have taken the Carolina deal? I don't know. Maybe.
Now, maybe they won't take because they know there's conversations out there that are better than that.
I suppose.
Maybe they have some choices to make.
I wouldn't be holding my breath.
But I can't believe that hasn't happened yet.
Yeah.
Certainly, there's the thought that if they don't, Baker will come in, play, and play well, and they can win some of those games in this suspension that Deshaun Watson's looking at. But, man, that's a pipe dream right now. That seems like really unlikely.
We do want to let you know there is a topic of discussion for you to weigh in on today. And it's on the tweet sheet right now at One Bills Live. What new wrinkle do you want to see the Bills implement into their offense in 2022? That's something for you to chew on. Feel free to give us an answer at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, or on the tweet sheet at One Bills Live. We will be back in just a few minutes with some of the more interesting comments from Bills offensive coordinator Ken Dorsey, who addressed the media for the first time in his new role. We'll bring that to you next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kalida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. And we wanted to bring you some of the comments from Bills offensive coordinator Ken Dorsey, who addressed the media earlier this morning. He covered a number of topics. If you don't have time, to listen to the full interview now because you're at work or doing whatever, you can go on BuffaloBills.com where we gave you a brief rundown of the highlights of his press conference this morning. But for those of you listening who can stay with us, here is Ken Dorsey.
Right now, we're exploring everything. It's the fun part of the off season where you got to be a little bit careful not to, you know, go too far one way or the other. We're still, you know, with all the new guys and some of the pieces that we've added and then that type of stuff, you know, you got to build your foundation just like every other year and make sure your core stuff is your core stuff. And, you know, those guys can execute that stuff in their sleep and then, you know, continue just to expand and add your wrinkles, add, subtract. And that's the fun part about it. It's like figure out what you think was good for you, figure out the stuff that you could do away with, and that way your volume stays manageable.
Is very comfortable for him to be used to you, and you know what works for him. But how much do you think you're gonna stray from what Dable's foundation was? Like how many tweaks do you think you're gonna have?
Yeah, I mean, everybody, whenever you come in, you always have your spin on things and your way of doing things. So, you know, are there going to be some different things? Probably. Are there going to be a lot of stuff that's the same? Probably. You know, it's just you never really know kind of how a season's going to unfold until the first couple weeks. You know, I mean, it's like, you know, until then, you just don't have a full grasp of, like, those new pieces, that the personnel that you've got. Like, what do you do, you know, extremely well when the bullets start flying and everything like that, you know? So you have a vision, but what I think the most successful coaches do is, yeah, they have that vision, but they're able to adjust and do some different things kind of as the season unfolds and declares, you know, just through whether it's, you know, guys that are up or down or guys that, you know, are new to us that you say, oh, well, that guy does that pretty good, so we might be a little bit more over here. Or, you know, the line does this really well, so we're going to be a little bit over there. But you tend not to really find that stuff out completely until it's live game action.
So how much of that, Coach, how do you morph and kind of change the vision, that your initial vision that you stated, as you get more and more time on the field with this, with new pieces in particular? Is it just a weekly thing that you review and then make changes the following week? Is it ever unfolding? I mean, it's ever unfolding.
Yeah.
Yeah,
no doubt. I think the best coaches are the ones who are constantly evaluating what they're doing. You know, what's good, what's you know, what doesn't fit you. Doesn't mean it's bad stuff. It just means it doesn't fit your personnel that year. And we all know with free agency and draft and everything, you know, those things could come back next year or 2 years from now or whatever. So, or as the season goes, you know. So I think you're constantly evaluating kind of your not really philosophy, but kind of what you're doing and how you're doing it, and always looking for better ways to improve, you know, improve the team and improve what you're doing and how you're doing it.
How far are you in a relationship with the fact that you have worked with Josh? He actually recommended you.
Mm-hmm.
How beneficial is that, and knowing what this offense is somewhat capable of, knowing that?
It doesn't hurt, you know. It's it definitely helps to have a good idea of Josh and then all the personnel. And that's where it's been nice being down on the field, too, on game days, getting a feel for Steph and Gabe and Mitch and Dawson and you know, all these guys, you know, and kind of how guys react to certain situations. You know, that's been really helpful to me throughout this whole thing, is just that communication back and forth that would happen on the sidelines amongst, you know, the players that then would get relayed to Dave's upstairs, you know. So I think all that is has been very helpful for me. And obviously, you know, my relationship with Josh and you know, I feel like a good feel for him on kind of how he reacts to things and you know, the things he likes, the things he doesn't like, you know, and I think all that's really important.
Is it fair to say you're not going to reinvent the wheel, though? I mean, knowing what this offense has done over the past, you know, couple of years, you know, once you got to that level of helping this last year.
Well, I mean, we've got a core of what, you know, what our philosophy is, and that's worked for us. And, you know, but at the same time, you've got to be able to evolve in this game. You've got to be able to, do some different things to keep defenses off balance and force them to react to you and not you reacting to them.
What is your style of play calling, and what have you learned under Coach Dave? Would that make you a better offensive
player? Yeah, I mean, I think my style is kind of similar to Dave's philosophy. Is like, what do we have to do to win the game? You know what I mean? And that's what it comes down to. Whether it's one more point, three more points, seven, four, whatever it is. Like, you know, the philosophy comes down to, like, what do we have to do to win the game? Whether it's run, whether it's pass, whether it's, you know, a field position game, whether it's a, you know, outscore them game. You know what I mean? Like, all that matters is trying to figure out ways to score at least one more point than your opponent, and that's what we're going to do. You know, all the other stuff is stuff that just kind of comes up naturally throughout the course of calling a game and the flow of the game.
What was that few days like for you when Ryan gets named head coach? You have to go through the process, the interview. Mm-hmm.
No, I mean it's something you look forward to as a, you know, as a coach. You know, you welcome that opportunity because it's something that I was hoping for and really kind of wanting to achieve. That's the one thing I've always kind of wanted to be, is the play caller and the guy kind of putting things together. And I just love, you know, I love ball. I love, you know, coaching football. I love the, you know, the game planning, the, coaching guys and being out on the field and putting a plan together and all that stuff. So, like, I love what I do, and I feel like this has, you know, been a great blessing for me to be able to be up here and now have this opportunity to lead the offense.
What's the transition been like not spending all of your time with Josh and knowing you have to kind of distribute your time on the field or in practices to do the entire offense?
Honestly, there's sometimes it's like, you know, it's like that Talladega Nights where I don't know what to do with my hands, you know? So, like, sometimes you're just like, what am I supposed to do right now? More so, like, individual out in the field. It's like you kind of end up walking in a circle, you know, just but you know, a lot of times you end up kind of gravitating back towards the quarterbacks a little bit. But, you know, I've definitely tried to make a concerted effort this year to be in each room. I think that's important because, you know, guys, they know me, but they don't, like, know me. You know what I mean? I don't think they kind of understand, like, what makes me tick sometimes, you know, my pet peeves or my, you know, or you know, my competitiveness or whatever it is. I think a lot of those guys get that because I've been down the field with them. But, you know, I think it's important to be in every room and be a part of each position group and kind of what they're doing and what they're teaching, and to show that, you know, I'm on the same page as all these guys who we've brought in and who are great coaches who are coaching them.
And you kind of touched on this earlier, talking about Josh and your relationship with him, but just, you know, how beneficial is it the fact that you're taking over this position and you have an established quarterback and mm-hmm. a guy that you've had this relationship? Just, you know, how has it evolved over the years?
No, obviously, I think it's very beneficial. I think it's a great, you know, opportunity to just kind of hit the ground running, you know, because there's not that feel-out period of, like, trying to figure out, hey, you know, how does he see this or versus how do I see it, you know. I talk with the quarterbacks a lot of, you know, the philosophy of or the intent of the play, you know. So when you're calling something, I think it's so important that the quarterback has to know why you're calling it. What's the intent of the reason why you're calling it? Is it a shot play? Is it a, you know, more of a completion type play? You know, and building that trust level of, you know, them understanding that so they can make a good decision based off that situation in the game, you know. So I think there's that constant communication. There's that constant kind of a feeling out process back and forth, but I feel like we got a great head start because, you know, we spent so much time together and gone through and had these conversations, you know, in the past.
Mm-hmm. All right, so that's Coach Ken Dorsey addressing the media for the first time as offensive coordinator on the Bills coaching staff. What were the biggest takeaways from his comments today, Steve? You and I sat in there when he addressed the media earlier today.
I mean, a little bit of everything. I got a little bit of the gargantuan task it is to be an offensive coordinator, where you've got to have a full volume of plays that give you every chance to win the game. If a a team does something unexpected, or if they do exactly what you thought and they're doing it well or worse or differently, you have to have a menu of an offense to give you a chance to take advantage of whatever they're doing. And then you have to have it all repped up so players can run it. And you've got an ever-changing group of skill sets. You know, Jamison Crowder's in the fold this year. Isaiah McKenzie has proven his. So you got two slot receivers. You got Gabe Davis, Stephon Diggs on the outside. You've got guys you want to work in and out. You've got tight ends you want to get in. All these juggling parts and the creativity, just jumped out at me what a gargantuan task it is and what he has in front of him. Also, I got a chance to talk to him briefly right at the beginning of practice. He was out there, and we just, kind of had some chuckles. Said, "Hey, you're great." I get a sense, and he said it right at the top of the interview. It's the fun part of the off season. And I get the point that he and the coaching staff and the players are really enjoying getting back to work, and he is really liking what his new role is. I think he's, enthused about his expanded role now as offensive coordinator rather than quarterback's coach. I think he's really enjoying himself at this point.
I think I came to develop a greater understanding for all the advantages that Ken Dorsey is going to have as a first-time coordinator, because he laid some of them out today. One of them is he already has an established rapport with the quarterback. He knows what he likes and doesn't like in given game situations, down and distance, scheme against what coverage. He has a working knowledge of all of that with Josh already because of the prior relationship they already have as he ascends into this new role. Second, he knows the vast majority of skill sets at his disposal in terms of the offensive skill position players. Then he has the added advantage, I believe, of having a quarterback's coach who's been a coordinator before in Joe Brady and an offensive line coach in Aaron Cromer, who's schemed offensive line play and protections for just about every scheme under the sun. Then you take that and throw in added pieces, and let's not forget this. He gets to play opposite the number one defense in football.
Right.
There are a lot of things that line up extraordinarily well for a guy who's going to be a first-time offensive coordinator at the NFL level. So you roll it all in, and it's just like, you know what? Odds are pretty damn good that the Bills are just going to keep on keeping on the offensive side of the ball.
Yeah, the only unknown, even for Ken Dorsey himself, am I going to have what it takes to call plays? He's never done it, at least at this level with this team. Now, he knows everything he needs to know. He's seen it done at a high level with Daboll over the last 3 years. Yeah. He's watched his quarterback grow. He's seen him, he's seen him execute. He's been in the room where the conversations, so everything should be just chugging along fine for the Bills offense. But when it comes down to it and he looks down at the menu in front of him, what's he going to call? And how's he going to call it? And what's he going to happen? And how he and Josh react?
I think he was very honest about that, though. He was very honest about that today. And I thought he had a lot of good answers today for his first press conference, for especially being so early in the game. And if he didn't have an answer to something, he told you. He said, we're not up to that yet. We're just trying to get in. We're just trying to get installs done. We're trying to evaluate the new players on the roster and what they can and cannot do. How are they going to be able to help us? There's a lot on that checklist.
I was thinking about it. I tried to get into his mind, and I asked a question. Because he's been a player, and then he's been a quarterback's coach. And we've all seen – people know what Ken Dorsey looks like. They see him on the sideline with Josh on television all the time. He's the guy that sat next to Josh and giving him an earful and back-and-forth bantering. They have a real relationship on the field. Now – he may be upstairs, and he's never been up there, or at least not for a long time. So he's got to think about, okay, I'm going to see this, do that. He's got, and he's going to miss the entire conversation. It's just going to be somebody else doing
it. Right, and he's been accustomed to those conversations because he's been a part of them for game the last three seasons, and Dable's been upstairs.
Yeah. Not only the play calling, but game day, how it's going to feel, how his – eyesight's going to change. What the things that are on his plate right at every given moment are going to be completely different. And that's the one thing you got to wait till the preseason games to find out if you can do it or if what's going to be comfortable for you.
Yeah. He'll be testing that out.
You get 3 games to do it, and I'm sure he'll probably have 1 or 2 games where he'll be on the sidelines calling the plays, and he'll have 1 or 2 games up top. where he's going to call the play, see how it goes. And it's not going to be smooth sailing, I bet, even into the regular season.
It's going to be an interesting journey, no question about it. And it's going to be right in front of us for all of us to watch every step of the way. So it'll be one of the fascinating parts about a team whose roster is pretty well established and set. I mean, there are a few jobs to be had. I know we got to take a break here. There's few openings on this roster player-wise. Right. It kind of makes this journey that Ken Dorsey is on one of the most compelling here in the preseason, right, coming up to, you know, late summer, early fall.
Now, he's got stuff to work for, but the pressure's on.
Yeah.
The pressure is on. This
gotta
is
make
super,
it work.
You got to – you first-year offensive coordinator, let's go. You need to go to the Super Bowl, bro, or it's a failure. Yeah. Thanks for stopping by. There you go. Forget all the stuff you got going for you.
Yeah.
That sits out there, and you can't avoid it.
No question about it. We have to take a break here. When we come back, Steve and I will review one of the most ridiculous arguments to ever come out of a fantasy football dispute that you've ever heard of. We'll bring that to you next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. So we know, Steve, when it comes to fantasy football, some people go harder than others, shall we say. But no one, at least to my knowledge, went as hard as Cincinnati Reds outfielder Tommy Pham, who over the weekend slapped San Francisco Giants outfielder Jock Peterson across the face over a fantasy football dispute prior to last Friday's game. It was during like warm-ups and batting practice, just went up, hauled off, and slapped him Will Smith style. And then we found out from Jock Peterson in the locker room, who had a very mellow and candid interview with reporters about the whole story, where he said he was mad thinking I broke the rules in fantasy football by taking a player who was inactive for a game and putting him on my injured reserve list so he could acquire another player who could play. And Pham apparently thought that was against the rules when in actuality it was not, and Peterson even texted him the rules, a picture of the rules to him, to show him he was in the right. But there was more to the story. Paul Harvey's rest of the story here for you. Apparently, Jock Peterson had also been chirping on text at Pham and his fellow Padres teammates at the time last year when they were fading down the stretch and were no longer a playoff threat, despite tens and hundreds of millions of dollars invested in the roster. So he said he was just joking, but as we know, things on text get taken out of context, they're interpreted differently. And so Pham said it was not only the fantasy football stuff, but it was him poking fun at their team last year. Obviously, Peterson was with the Braves last year. They won the World Series. But to the point where you walk up to a guy 4 months later and slap him? Yeah. This only reinforces Steve's theory about baseball players.
I'm not going to say it. I don't want to. I'm not jumping on that bonfire. You got guys in pregame warm-ups
slapping each other
over fantasy football. Now, listen.
Well, he claims a lot of money was on the line.
A lot of money on the line. I get it. And that raises the stakes. But one of the other guys said, listen, and one of the guys apparently, he didn't break the rules.
Yeah.
And one idiot thought he did, and the other idiot. So,
woo!
There you go. So, I'm, you know, it's to it, this whole thing, to me, picture 2 8-year-old millionaires emotionally. fighting at recess.
Yeah.
So, what are they doing? So I get it. So you know, they got
hitting each
other
with pool noodles.
They got more time and money they can do anything constructive with. So they end up getting into a
brouhaha about fantasy football.
A slap fight. They get into a slap fight in the outfield.
Well, apparently, Jock Peterson.
It's embarrassing. Are you? Yeah, is that? Can I just say what it is? What are you, six?
Yeah.
Good grief.
No recess for you tomorrow.
Right.
And that's basically the punishment that
you go
Pham
sit in the
got.
Corner.
He got a 3-game suspension, so he couldn't go play baseball.
And it cost him $100,000, which is, you know, sounds like a lot of money, but they probably
Be more than he lost in fantasy football.
Yeah, it might be, but it might only be, it might be that they lost $10 too. That's a lot of money.
Yeah,
you know, you don't know what these guys think about their money. They it might have been a $50 buy-in.
Yeah.
That you're going to win $600 in.
Something tells me.
And the guy's making $7 million. It's not even, they're not even playing for a long, they might not even be playing for a long weekend to go to Vegas to actually gamble.
Yeah.
They might be playing for $50. You know, and it might be 50,000. Who knows? But it's going to cost the guy $100,000 because the two of them acted like, seriously,
yeah.
They acted like elementary school kids at recess.
It was not pretty.
What are you doing?
It reflects poorly on Major League Baseball on the whole when you have guys from different teams slapping each other over fantasy football. Where are we as a society when fantasy football elicits that kind of reaction out of somebody? Not only that, the fact the season ended 3 months ago. And you're still sore about it 3 months later that the first time you see the guy,
you
walk clean across the outfield and slap him across the face.
They'll do the same. They'll be in the same league again this year, both of them. They'll be right back at it.
Good grief.
And they'll do it's like, forget about evolving and getting better and growing up. I don't want to do it. I'm just going to stay here and slap people.
Unbelievable. Okay. I saw that. That's mouth hung open.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
We have to take a break here. When we come back, we will be bringing you some comments from the players fresh off the practice field as OTA Week 2 is already underway. First practice of the week today, Gabriel Davis, Mitch Morse, Devin Singletary, all of them address the media. We'll have some of them coming your way next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio.
Tasker, who has been all over the field.
Kind of unique. He was kind of a dual-role player for you.
Steve.
A balloon.
Steve. A blimp. We're not even in the stratosphere of normalcy. Hour number two on a Tuesday. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. OTA practice week numero dos. And players addressing the media post-practice today. Leading them off was Bills wide receiver Gabriel Davis, who talked about a number of topics, including their new OC, Ken Dorsey. Here is Gabe.
What relationship did you have with him last year when he was the quarterback's coach, and what have you learned about him more personality-wise now that you maybe interact with him more?
I learned he's tough and wants to make big plays and wants to beat every single team, no matter what the score is, no matter what the week is. Or no matter who the team is, we always want to win. We want to come out big. I know that's the big message that he wants to send out this year, and that's what we're going to try our best to do.
How does Coach Dorsey cater to your strengths so far?
Like I said, he likes to pass the ball. He wants to create big plays. He wants to be the best OC in the game, and I know with that you got to be calling the right stuff at the right time. And when the big plays happen, it'll all be because of him. So,
do you notice a difference between things with Ken now and in limited time and compared to how Dave's did it?
I feel like it's too early to tell when it comes to that kind of stuff. They both have great minds and want to run a great offense, and I feel like they're pretty similar in a lot of ways. Obviously, they have their own little things about them that are different, but, again, great offensive minds, both of them.
What are some of the things that you think that will complete you as a receiver this season?
As a receiver, route running, recognizing coverages, and being able to make contested catches, and just being out there for 70, 80 plays and executing at a high level.
How did learning from like Emmanuel Sanders and Cole Beasley prepare you for that?
Yeah, I feel like it was great. I've had some of the best guys who ever played the game and played with some of the best guys who've ever played the game to give me pointers throughout my past 2 years being under them. And I'm excited now to step up and play that role and be able to use what they gave me in order to execute.
Can you tell us yet what Emmanuel told you last season that kind of unlocked things in the back end?
Yeah, it's funny. Actually, I was someone asked me that. I remember I told him, but it was just I did a lot of standing up in my stance, and I feel like I had to kind of let a split second of the time being wasted by just trying to get out of it. So staying low, being strong, and playing to my strength, being a big physical receiver. So that kind of helped me out and helped me understand what I could do just right at the start of the play to become way better.
On that note, I saw Chad working with you on like some pressure hands, like almost like you have to be a boxer a little bit on defensive. What's the difference since you've evolved in facing press coverage at this level? What's it like?
I mean, back when I was at UCF for the past 2 years, I was lining up 2 yards from the out of bounds, so I was always seeing press coverage. It's not about that. I just want to be the best at it. Being a bigger receiver, you're not the quickest at the line, so guys feel like they can put their hands on you a little bit more easier, and that's what they're going to try and do. So just working on this hands, trying to be the best at that. I feel like I am good at the line of scrimmage when it comes to that stuff, and just want to, again, have that be, you know, a big strength of my game.
Is that part of that, not giving them anywhere to place their hands? You're not just fighting off, but you just talk about how you stand and things like that.
Yeah, just staying low, not giving them your chest. And if they do hit you, which they will, there'll be guys that'll get their hands inside of you. Just being able to stay calm and be able to still get their hands off you and play through it.
How'd you get your head right this offseason after Kansas City?
You know, I feel like I really didn't need to do anything. I mean, I'm blessed with that game and what it brought me, but we lost, and, you know, it wasn't the game that it should have been. Kind of already over it. You know, people bring it up to me all the time. Kind of tired of hearing it. I understand that, you know, it was a great game. I loved it. I appreciate everything. It was the biggest blessing in my life that could have happened to me. But the future's now, and we got to move on, and now it's time for, you know, year three.
How much confidence does it give you to know that Josh trusts you?
It gives you a lot of confidence. I mean, a guy of that caliber to be able to, you know, lean on and know that he can lean on you in those tight pressure situations is what you work so hard for, to have the team trust you. I feel like that's my biggest thing. I want everybody on that team to know when I'm out there on the field, they're going to get my best and they can trust me when I'm out there to win the game.
David, all the success that you've had, some of these younger guys are going to be looking at you and say, hey, you were a rookie and a second-year guy and going to year three. Is it any different this time around with a lot of, you know,
yeah, of course. Just having the experience now a little bit going into my third year and being able to play the snaps that I've done. I do see how that role is kind of being pushed onto me now. So I'll do whatever I can to help those guys. But, again, I'm still learning. I'm a young receiver, and I'm glad I got a guy like Jameson here now and Stephon Diggs, even Isaiah McKenzie, guys that have been in the league for a while to be able to learn from and still gain a lot of knowledge and become a better receiver. Dorsey just wants to attack every single play. He doesn't want to let up on anything, and that's the biggest thing. I'm happy that he's going to give us a lot of opportunities to go out there and make big plays, and that's what you need too, because not every game is going to be your best game. Just as much as you can have 4 touchdowns in one, you can have 4 drops in one as well. But even having those same opportunities to be able to go out there and execute is always what you want.
Like catching passes from the offensive coordinator.
Yeah, he got me on one. I slipped out of my hands a little bit. I was a little hesitant coming around the back. You know, he's over there slinging it still in between. But it was fun to see him do that. You know, you see how guys who used to play, they kind of get that it sometimes. They just want to get into a drill randomly. Chad does that a lot too. So it's fun having that happen out here.
Like, from your perspective, having a guy in Ken Dorsey move into that offensive coordinator role who already knows you, sort of, right?
Yeah,
already
exactly.
Knows the system. You know, how does that affect you?
Yeah, I mean, it just makes our life a lot easier. We still have a similar offense, tweaking some things here and there, but it's nothing too crazy of a change. And, again, it's always good when you have, and I'm not, you know, but he played the quarterback position. He's been back there. He's been through the fire. He's been on great teams and played with great people. He understands, you know, what people want and what us players want, and that's a lot of fun to have a guy like that back there.
What is Dorsey's personality like? Because we know
we've seen
Dave Walter has a pretty big
Dorsey has a huge personality. You know, he gets fired up quick, so he's gonna have to be in the box. We can't have him out there on the field, so if he hears this, he needs to know that he's definitely going to be in the box all year. Yeah, no, we'll decide. We'll make sure he's in the box. We'll make sure he's up there for sure.
I think that last comment, Steve, is an example of the fact that Dorsey, while he may have been in the quarterback's room each of the last three seasons coaching quarterbacks, there are enough guys that he has developed relationships with across the offense. And that comment by Gabe Davis is evidence of that. I mean, he's saying it in a joking manner, but he's saying it because you don't say that if you don't have a relationship right. with a new coordinator. I think it's evidence that one exists for him and probably a lot of the other guys on the offensive side of the ball. I remember Diggs saying a month or two ago, Dorsey is my guy. That's my guy.
Yeah.
I think it's very healthy to know that even though Dorsey was sitting in that quarterback's room 90% of the time and dealing with quarterbacks 95% of the time on the field, that he had enough presence of mind to engage the other members of the offense even when he wasn't the OC, because it's going to pay dividends now.
Right. Here's if for those of you who don't get the dynamic that's at work here, you've got the head coach, you've got the coordinator, then you've got the coordinators, then you've got the position coaches, like the quarterback's coach, the wide receiver's coach, the DB coach, the tight end's coach, all that stuff. The position coaches are the guys, as a player, I can go up to and say, what's going on? How's come we're doing that? You can complain. You can have a real conversation with them as a human being, almost like a peer. Say, dang it, well, you know, why are we doing this? Da, 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 da. And the guy will say, you know, just he'll either say, you know, shut up and sit down. Says, no, you're not understanding. Look at it this way. That gives a heart-to-heart, a real conversation about if you have something going on, you can go to them and say it. So now what happens is one of those guys that you have this relationship with where you can – all the bars are down. All the barriers are down. You can complain. You can swear. You can
– poke fun.
Poke fun. You have a real friendship with the guy on a personal level. Now he's one of the guys up top. And he's, you know him because you've had emotional conversations on game day where you can yell and scream and be ticked at the universe to him. And he hears it. And he gives you feedback. And he gets you through that. Now he's a guy who's calling the shots at a certain level, right?
Mm-hmm.
You really know who the guy is. And that gives you some insight as to his personality, what he's going to portray to the offense, what he wants to do, and guys coach the way they are. You know, they're themselves. So these guys feel like they've got a real handle on what Ken Dorsey's going to do as a coordinator, and it's fun for them, I think. That's what a quarterback's coach does. It's a liaison between Josh and Matt Barkley and Case Keenum and whoever it's been over these last 4 or 5 years. He's been a conduit to Brian Daboll.
Mm-hmm.
And the quarterback coach can also say, hey, Josh is saying this in the offensive meeting rooms. In our quarterback room, he's saying this when you're not around.
And Dorsey said today that he has made a point now as the offensive coordinator to spend time on the practice field with every position group, kind of making the rounds, so to speak, because – you know, they have a quarterback's coach. That's Joe Brady. He's handling quarterbacks. You got to oversee the whole thing. So he's made a point to get around to every part on the practice field, every position group's room he has been in the early stages of the offseason program here. So he's made his presence felt, and I think he has a healthy relationship with the balance of the roster. And that's why Gabriel Davis said, Dorsey said it this morning. He hasn't made a decision as to whether he's going to be upstairs or down. And there's Gabe Davis an hour and a half later joking he's got to go upstairs because he's going to get too excited to be out on the field.
That's the kind of relationship these guys have. And these players, they got some ownership now of the relationship with the coordinator.
Yeah.
It'll be all hands on deck, not only for all of us, but for all of us to be successful. You know, they're gonna feel comfortable chiming in to their friend, even if he's the coordinator,
right?
Because they've got a relationship with him, and when you're all hands on deck, all feel like they can contribute and want to. So it's a great atmosphere to be a part of.
And Dorsey even said today, when he was asked about, well, what kind of input is Josh gonna have in the offense? Dorsey said, look, it would be foolish of me not to have some healthy give and take with Josh. Fortunately for us, we both see the game the same way and view it through a very similar lens. And because of that, we feel very comfortable with the give and take that we have. But there will be times where I'll say, no, we're going to do it this way, but here's the reason why. And I think he takes a similar approach with a lot of players on the roster who, as you suggested, may come to him and say, hey, why aren't we doing this? We should be doing this. And he might say, well, I respect that idea, but we're going to do it this way, and here's why.
Right.
And when you have a why behind the what, players can respect that. And,
absolutely.
And that's huge.
And a lot of times, those whys that don't agree with what one, for instance, it could be the wide receiver saying, "Listen, we need this guy on the field. You know, we need to go four wides. We need more of our guys on the field because of my that." And he'll come in and say that that's fine. Here's the problem with it, because defenses are always going to do this against us, and we can't fight that. We can't do this. We can't plus do this. And there's always a reason for it. Now, when we get into certain teams that can't do this, we will do that. That kind of thing. So when you get the reasons why, players are like, okay, fine, I get it, let's go. That kind of thing. But at the current level of the NFL, particularly with a team like Buffalo, who's been in this offense for 4 years with this court, with this, the stability they have in the room, they've all evolved to the same place. Mm-hmm. And they know they can go back and say, well, you know what? 2 years ago we did this and this happened. Why don't we do this now? And they'll say, because of this. Oh, okay, I get it. Well, how then? What about this? And then they'll say, well, yeah, okay, let's try it. That kind of – all these conversations, it's PhD-level stuff, and a lot of it is experimentation. And that's what Dorsey was kind of giddy about today. He says, that's where we're at in the scene. We're kind of experimenting with some stuff we may be able to do we haven't been able to do in the past.
Well, and one thing that people even said about Ken Dorsey as a college player was that he had it between the ears, and that's going to serve him very well now in his current role. Another player who addressed the media after practice today was Bills center Mitch Morse. So let's turn to Mitch now and hear his comments on how things are going thus far in OTAs.
I guess Rodgers got the most experience you've ever played next to him. Is that right?
What does that do? I mean, it's just a guy who's clocked in a bunch of hours in the field, 100-something games under his belt starting. Guys have seen pretty much everything, an old CBA guy, So those are diamond a dozen nowadays. So when you get a guy like that, you pick his brain. He's very forthcoming and very generous with knowledge and information. He's not afraid to tell you what he thinks in the best way possible, and that's what we need. And there's always good dialogue from what he likes from a center, how he's going to help me out. And it's just really exciting to be a part of.
What are your impressions of this revamped offensive line?
It's just the nature of the beast every year. Guys come and go. I mean, you lose some really dear friends, some guys you've built rapport with. This year we seem to bring in a really heavy veteran presence, guys who've clocked in a lot of games, whether it's Greg, DQ, Roger, to name a few. And then you have the rookies who I think are a really good class of guys, really want to absorb the information and then try to correlate what they learned in the classroom to the field, which is all you can ask for. So I feel like we got a great group of dudes. We got a guy at the helm, Coach Cromer, who's got us firing on all cylinders. And right now it's just trying to get better. We have a lot of work to do and a ton of work, but it's also a little bit exciting.
How much interaction do you have with Dorsey? Because, he was part of the quarterback in the position.
Yeah, I mean, he's very hands-on, like most offensive coordinators are. He's a great delegator of what he wants to his the people he works with. I think he's more of a peer to those coaches than just a superior, which I think is great because you have guys who have a lot of experience underneath him, and it's free range dialogue, and they're working with Cromer and all those guys, and it's just been. I think he's going to rise to the occasion. We're all going to have growing pains, especially as players. He's done a great job of merging what we had before into what his vision is, and right now, so we're trying to marry those two, and it's a kind of a fun thing to do. Tremendously. Yeah, I mean, we understand at least the baseline of what he's looking for. Now he's going to put his own, little stank to it. And we enjoy that.
What are some of the things that Coach Cromer has done that made it a media impact?
Every O-line coach is different. I know that's cliche and kind of course. But, he tries to work everyone's advantages, their strengths, into their advantages. So maybe he doesn't coach me the same as he would coach someone else just because physiologically we move differently or we're playing different positions. Now, there's certain, like every O-line coach, there's certain things that are undeniably what we're going to do as an offensive line. But at the same time, there's certain things that certain guys he'll let do because they play to their individual strengths.
How
tell us a little bit about Case. I know you worked with Matt in the past. About Case, what's
going on? A pro's pro. Great guy. Immediately emerged in the locker room. Got a great personality. Clocked in a lot of good games. You know, he's played a lot of football. Has rapport with some guys already. And he's just a ball player and a fun guy at that. So we get to marry those two together, and it's been really fun.
I'm thinking about Spencer Tyler when I asked this question. Can you go back to your first to second year, that first full offseason you had, and what the difference was where they can make that jump?
Yeah, I would say that first to second year you hear is, and for me it was the case, is a huge one because not only does the game slow down a little bit because you've clocked in some hours, you're comfortable in your own skin a little bit more. You have some rapport with people around the building. You know, it's not all new. Now you're going to have that with a new OC and a new O-line coach. We're all kind of going through that. So that also alleviates some stress that you're not the only guy going through this, right? So I'm looking forward to those guys getting back, or, you know, Spencer getting back, playing good ball. And Tommy's just has been a pro this offseason, really soaking up, taking advantage of the opportunities he's getting.
How much of this new run attack you love, and how much will it give this offense balance they need?
Yeah, it's different for sure. We're going to have to get used to it. We're going to have to trust the technique and trust what coach is preaching. He's got the tape to show it. We know it works. It'll just be kind of working some of those things that we've been, you know, taught for so long, trying to get those out of our head. And he's been very patient with us. And I think what we have to do, like any run, you know, like any good team that can run, is that everyone's got to be on the same page. So for us, it's right now, it's a little bit of everyone trying to get on the same page. And that's just going to take time and take practice. And it's going to be a little frustrating until we get there, but we'll get there.
Comfortable does Devin Singletary and Zach Moss look in this new offense, and what are your thoughts on James Cook?
Yeah, I mean, Devin and Zach, you know, they're pros, guys who are very comfortable in their own skin, who work hard, compete hard, you know, just ferocious runners and great teammates, and you know, the Rook is awesome. Mr. Cook is he's a stud, and he, you know, quiet guy, but ferocious competitor, all ball, which everyone appreciates. And I think he's going to be a great asset for our team and our locker room.
We talked to you guys a lot about Brian Daboll and just overall the culture that's been through over the last couple of years. When it comes to Ken Dorsey and your experience with him, and you've seen him around here at Ken, well, how does he add to the culture? What's going to be different about that with him now kind of steering that offensive ship?
Well, I think you look at the similarities, you know, Dave's wore it on his sleeve, but Dorsey's a ferocious competitor. I mean, absolutely a killer competitor. And it's kind of fun to see him, you know, blow his top every once in a while. But it comes from a good place. It's never malice. It's just he wants to succeed and wants us to succeed so bad. So, we'll have to see. It's so new right now. It's so young. We'll see what we look like in training camp. I mean, you know, half these drills are jog through, and you know, it'll be kind of fun to see where it goes.
Like Gabe said, everybody wants him up top.
Oh yeah, that's definitely it. Yeah, yeah, because the Holy Spirit comes out of him every once in a while, and it's kind of fun to see. Yeah.
Is it fun when you say that? Do you mean like afterwards,
yeah,
or in the moment, or are you guys kind of laughing about it?
Oh, no. I mean, kind of. I mean, it's just he's such a nice guy. I mean, he's a brilliant football coach, but even he's just so competitive that, like I just said, it's the best way you can describe it is the Holy Spirit come out of him. You don't know what's going to come out, and it's funny at times, but at the same time, you don't want to be on the other end of that because it can be ruthless. We haven't been. No one's been on the end of that yet. We don't want to.
Did you get much sleep?
Oh yeah, yeah. Sleep. I mean, my wife's taking the run of it right now. The kids aren't here. I'm sleeping great. I owe her a lot.
Matches tomorrow, man. Any you know, thoughts or, you know, pointers you want to give Josh right now?
No, not at all. Go out, have fun, dude. That's it. Talk your smack and have fun. Yeah, absolutely. I think everyone's excited. You know, I think all those guys are pretty good golfers. So it'll really, I mean, I think there's a genuine, just like, we'll see where it goes. You know, hopefully it's not too late because some of us have to practice tomorrow or the day after. So we'll be. It's a little shot at him. He's doing great. Love Josh.
That's a good golfer. Who's the best?
Josh. Yeah. So there you go. Advantageous for him. The best I've seen. I'm terrible, so it's cool. Yeah. No, we'll go together. That it? All right. Thanks, guys.
All right. That's Mitch Morris addressing the media. Perhaps his funniest comment was concerning Ken Dorsey and how excited he gets when good things happen on the field. He said the Holy Spirit comes out of him every once in a while.
Yeah.
Also had some interesting things to say about rookie running back James Cook, Buffalo's second-round draft choice. We'll discuss that more on the other side of this break, along with your comments on the tweet sheet. And we'll also tell you about a special former All-Pro visitor to the sidelines at practice today. All of that coming your way next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kalida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, so just to dovetail off of Mitch Morse's comments that you just heard, if you were with us here on One Bills Live, he did have an interesting comment on James Cook, the rookie running back, second-round pick of the Bills. Last month, he said, quote, "He's a heck of a rook, that guy Cook. Quiet guy, but a ferocious competitor. He's all ball, which all of the guys in the locker room appreciate. He's going to help us," end quote.
Yeah,
he's a real deal.
Yeah, we've seen. I know this. Kaiir Elam is going to be on the field. I think he's going to be plug and play. He's that good, and he's good in all that stuff. But I think James Cook is going to be viewed as one of those guys that's like, wow. I think his skill set is such that it translates perfectly to what the Bills want to do, what the Bills have been lacking in some respects, and a weapon that gives defenses problems. I think he runs the ball well enough to be the guy out of the backfield and certainly gives them some flexibility to maybe split him out and let him run routes on corners. They're going to have to cover him, and that's a problem for some defenses. So I'm kind of with Mitch. I think it's one skill set that the Bills didn't really use a ton of in the past, you know, in the Josh Allen years. Maybe he's the guy that will change that.
Yeah.
And I think he's got a chance to do it.
And I think his off-the-field disposition is very much low-key. But even Brandon Bean said it. When the lights come on, he goes. And I think Bills fans are going to just have to wait to see that. But when it's game time, this kid's ready to make things happen.
I like guys like that. Josh is a little – we talked about Josh being a little bit like that. He likes the big moments, you know. It used to translate itself into sugar high Josh. Now it translates itself into this touchdown machine that doesn't miss a beat. Yeah, he's a gamer.
When the stakes are higher, he plays better.
And it would be great to have another guy in your offense like that,
yep,
with that in his resume. When the lights come on, he's at his best because this is a team that plans on playing in some pretty big moments in this season, so in the coming years. So I'm with you. I think that speaks really well of Cook.
There was an interesting attendee at practice today standing along the sidelines, former Carolina Panthers All-Pro linebacker Luke Kuechly, taking in practice today. Spent a long time, probably about 10 minutes, with Coach McDermott on the sideline. They were just chewing the fat there, and then he stopped and talked to Brandon Bean as well after giving him a big old bear hug. So as sharp a cerebral player as you'll find, I mean, I can't tell you how many offensive coordinators in the league when he was playing talking about how he would literally call out the opponent's plays, then get to the spot two steps before the offensive player would with the football.
I was in the booth doing games. I did some Carolina games during his entire career. I think we finished about, I don't know how long he's been out, but anyway, most of his career I was doing games. You watch either teams that Carolina was playing or getting ready for a Carolina game. Brownie. He looked clairvoyant on film.
Yeah. Not to mention he was a hell of an athlete, too.
He was a great linebacker. The ball is snapped, and he runs straight to the ball before even some of the other, you know what I mean, before even the offensive players. I mean, he was a step ahead of everybody. The offensive line couldn't get to him because he was already ahead of the play mentally before the snap. I mean, you could see him pointing and just his communication ability, his ability to dissect what was going to happen before it happened. It was really astounding. It was one of the during my 20 plus years of doing games from the booth, he was one of the players that was literally amazing to me to watch on film. So, and he's been at Bill's practices before because of his close relationship with McDermott. So, not unusual, but certainly I think he's one of the guys that Sean McDermott knows can offer something even to players today.
Oh, yeah. And I would say if he was willing to do it, he probably had him sitting in the linebacker's room with those guys at some point today. Yeah. And, you know, hopefully he obliged because I think he does have a lot to offer in terms of the anticipation skills that he possesses. Some of those are innate, but if he can give any tips to the guys that are going to be on the field this year for the Bills, all the better. Let's get to the tweet sheet brought to you by Corrigan Moving Systems, the official equipment moving company of the Buffalo Bills. As we have asked you today, what new wrinkle do you want to see the Bills implement into their offense in 2022? Christopher leads us off and says, more two tight end sets. Give those defensive ends a chip. Just mess up their timing and go get open. 100 days till the season. Go Bills. What do you think about two tight end sets, Steve, with O.J. Howard now in the fold?
He can run, man.
I got to say, seeing him out on the field, he is big.
He's like, big and he's fast.
You can look at a guy's height and weight on a roster sheet, but then you look, he looks big on a field of big guys.
Yes, he looks big on a field of big guys. He's faster than a lot of guys, too. So he's got that. That's a plus. I mean, it's a possibility, no question about it. I think that's one of the fun things. And we saw it, Ken Dorsey, and also Christopher says, you know, 100 days, go Bills. There's so many new things about this offense that seem to be upgrades from a year ago. I mean, O.J. Howard physically is an upgrade. And then you got, like, Saffold at guard and the right tackle, and I came from Tennessee.
Kessenberry.
Those two guys were starters on the offensive line for Tennessee Titans in their run with their run game. So are you going to explore that a little bit with two tight ends and two road graders of offensive linemen in there?
Second tight end could be Kessenberry.
Now you got James Cook in the fold along with Jamison Crowder and Isaiah McKenzie, two slot receivers. I mean, there's a lot of upgrades and extra stuff, that weapons that seem to be really NFL caliber at a high level that the Bills did not have at their disposal a year ago.
Yeah.
And an offensive coordinator that's, you know, new to this and is seeing it for the first time.
Yeah.
It's really intriguing what this offense is going to look like. And certainly they're not going to tell us anything about what it's going to look like until they kick it off on opening day. I think there's a lot to be really excited about. And, you know, just how are they going to do it? How are they going to unload all this? Because there's a lot in this.
Yeah. To your point, they have raised the caliber of the collective.
Yes.
There is no debating that whatsoever. The only question mark is, how are they going to deploy?
Yeah, how do they maximize all of it at once?
Right. How are they going to deploy all of that week to week? Because it will have to be different week to week because your opponents are going to change week to week. And how do you maximize it? Yeah, that is the big question mark that we're all wondering.
You really have to be excited and optimistic about their ability to take a step forward, as good as they were a year ago. Really excited and optimistic about what their offense may do.
Daniel on the tweet sheet says, lots of Cook. He is a stud. Just get him the ball, and then Josh will have a field day all day. Go Bills. Yeah, people are excited about Cook. I know I am. You know, I mean, we had Brandon Bean in here like a couple of days after the draft was over, and we told him point blank, Cook's our favorite pick here of the ones you made. Nice job there.
Yeah.
I mean, I was pumped.
But think about it. Cook is only one of them. Then you got Saffold and Kessenberry. Then you got Crowder and Isaiah McKenzie. You got more Gabe Davis. He's going to be on the field more. O.J. Howard is on the field. And Cook is just one of them.
Right.
Now, he may be the most versatile because you can hand it to him and throw it to him, and you can line him up anywhere.
He's almost positionless.
Right.
Think about it.
That's big. So, yes. Well, there's a lot of tasty morsels in this offensive roster right now.
E-Horse down the tweet sheet says, I'm hoping to see more action out of the running backs and less running from our quarterback. Every time he takes off, my whole body tenses up until he's safe again. I'm an old guy, and the stress isn't good for me. The entire program is built around Josh, and I just want him healthy for years to come. Understood. I get it, E-Horse.
I agree. We've talked more about, too, the short yardage stuff, right?
Yeah, who's got that role? Is that going to be Zach Moss or?
It's been Josh as much as anybody.
I know.
He'd like to get kind of – if you're going to lower his rushing stuff, when he drops back and takes off with the ball in his hand after a passing play has been defended, I'm okay with that.
Buy some time, make a play.
Yeah, extend the play or get the first down slide. You can control the contact there. But the short yardage stuff, even as good as he is – you know, that's kind of where you can't avoid it. You know, maybe that's where they're going to do it.
Paul on the tweet sheet says, Spencer Brown tackle eligible in the red zone. You want to talk about a tall target. You could throw the thing 9 feet in the air and he'll just stick his hand up and grab it. And let's not forget, Spencer Brown was a tight end in 8-man football in high school. It's not like that kind of play in the red zone would be foreign to him.
Right. All these guys have played different sports, most of them have at one point.
Tight end, though. He's got some tight end experience.
Little hoops.
I like it.
Hoops background doesn't hurt either. I mean, all that stuff goes into the – but, yes, I agree totally. There's some tall dudes out there, really tall guys. And I was looking today, one of the guys that also caught my eye, like, who is that guy? And it's this guy Luke Tenuta.
One of their late-round draft choices out of Virginia Tech, the offensive tackle.
What is he, 6'9"?
I think he's 6'8", 314.
Who is that? And I was like, who is that? I had to look him up. I was like, who is that guy? They keep getting these guys. And listen, you can't – the only thing you can't coach is height.
Yeah.
Everything – size, you know, weight, strength. Everything else could be fixed.
I was saying it the other day.
You can't coach tall.
You got a roster of velociraptors out there.
It's unbelievable.
It's ridiculous.
It's unbelievable.
You got about 8 guys you could play in the low post in the NBA.
Like they got another one. I go, who is that?
Yeah.
I got this roster and I'm good grief. They got another one.
Yeah.
EJ, so they got all these guys that could play it.
We have to take a break, but EJ puts a nice bow on the tweet sheet for us. Nothing gimmicky. I want Dorsey to take in all these next few months and come up with a plan that takes advantage of the talents this current team has. As Tasker always says, it's a new season. It's a new team. We as fans should trust the coaching staff. They proved it. Amen to that. We take a break here. Steve and I to close things up next on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. So I got two shout-outs I got to give, Steve, to two of our loyal listeners.
All right.
One of them, Luis Reyes, who listens to us in his truck every day, all day. Met him over the weekend, went salmon fishing with him up on Lake Ontario, caught us some good fish. I'll be grilling it up
tonight.
Oh, yeah.
Look at you.
I'll show you some pictures. Luis Reyes, good guy, always has it on in the truck. He says even some of his coworkers yell at him to put some music on. He's like, no, we got to learn today. Right, he leaves the station on. So thank you, Luis, for listening. Second guy, Alan, took care of us when we took our daughter out to dinner for her birthday this weekend. And he's cracking jokes with her because he heard our story about trying to move her out of the dorms this week. He goes, oh, heard about your move out of the dorm was pretty entertaining. That's She's like, funny. What the heck is... Listens to the show, so Alan took good care of us. Thanks to him. Last thing, a good luck to Jesse Pegula.
That's
who
right.
Who is in the quarterfinals in the singles. And, Steve, she's in the doubles with Coco Gauff. That's her doubles partner.
Oh, yeah.
They're playing, I think, either – hold on. I pulled it up real quick. They're playing tomorrow in the doubles, Jesse Pegula and Coco Gauff against a German and Hungarian team tandem in the quarterfinals of the French Open. So she's in the quarterfinals for doubles and singles. That's a heavy schedule.
Come on.
Good luck to Jesse.
Good luck to Jess. Let's go.
As she's kind of working her way up here in these majors. It's kind of cool.
It's guy's kind of vertical.
Playing on clay is totally different, though. Those people are sliding and swinging.
And it takes, like, forever. They hit the ball, like, 9 times before it gets. Usually, like, on grass, it's like, tick, tick, gone.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
More coming your way tomorrow here on One Bills Live. We'll see you at 1.